Good morning, everyone. I'm so excited to see so many of you filling up this auditorium so that we can have a lively discussion today. As it was previously mentioned, I am the health director at Family Circle Magazine. Please check us out online at familycircle.com. And just on a personal note, I'm really... Oh, of course. I will come all the way up to the microphone. And just on a personal note, I'm really excited to be here in Boston because I did go to Harvard, so it's nice to come back home. Thank you. I just want to issue thanks to the Massachusetts Conference for Women. This is such a wonderful event, and I'm thankful to be here, and I know all of our panelists are as grateful as well to be invited to speak here today. What I did in preparation for this topic is I posted a message on Family Circle's Facebook page, actually, and I said, tell me how your body has changed in the past 10 years. And I got a ton of responses. Does anybody want to guess kind of what the most popular response was? Yeah, weight gain. Weight gain definitely came up. Aches and pains, feeling aches all the time definitely came up. And there was a lot of, there were some very lengthy responses also. There was a lot of emotion wrapped up in those changes. So in response to that, we have this perfectly tailored panel to talk about those top three topics that came up when I did post that. I wanted to briefly introduce our panelists to you. They're going to talk a little bit about themselves as well when I give them the go-ahead. But first, I wanted to I'm going to go from your left to right. So the first panelist that we have is Chrissy Wellington. She's a former Division I athlete, and she is a licensed dietitian and nutritionist at Canyon Ranch in Lexington, Massachusetts. Next up, we have Vonda Wright. She's an orthopedic surgeon and an internationally recognized authority on active aging and mobility. And she has two books out, Fitness After 40, How to Stay Strong at Any Age, and Guide to Thrive, Four Steps to Body, Brains, and Bliss. And then we have Vivian Diller, who is a PhD and is a psychologist in private practice in New York, where I'm coming from also. And her book is Face It, What Women Really Feel as Their Looks Change. So I'm going to jump us right into chatting about some things that we can all do to improve our lives. But one thing I want to do before we do that is I want to encourage everyone to at least take one tip that you get from this panel today and act on it immediately. I've been to lots of conferences before, and I know you get really excited, and there's all this great advice, and you feel really empowered, and then you kind of let life get in the way. So please take one tip and actually do it today. And also share it with a friend. Share it with somebody who unfortunately wasn't able to come today and take out a day to really focus on becoming a better woman, and tell them what you learned so that you can spread the word. So now I'm going to turn to our panelists. If you could all just go down the line and tell everybody a little bit about yourself kind of quickly and give them a little bit of an idea of what they might take away from today's discussion. Starting with Chrissy.
So I'll start. Can you all hear me? Am I loud enough today?
Or do you want to? You can come up. Do you want to come up to the mic?
Let me just kind of step up here. So I was a former athlete, so no cheerleader, but I'm used to kind of getting my voice out there a little bit, so I hope you can all hear me. Like Linnea said, I'm a nutritionist at Canyon Ranch. My sports were softball. I was very lucky to get a scholarship to St. John's University in Queens. Yay, New York. Yay. Didn't want to leave the city. But what was really interesting about being a softball player is that they're known for being these big girls, big strong girls, and at that time, for the first time in my life, I was one of the smaller girls on the team, which was one very interesting point for me. So I'm really excited today to talk to you about this world of your ever-changing body. Being in my 30s right now, I think I've finally come into the world of planning a family. I have friends who are now having babies. I have friends who have gone through eating disorders in the past. I myself have gone through this world of athletics and body image. So really excited today just to share some tips with you about your own performance, not just in the athletic world, but in your everyday lives, keeping your vitality. Very, very excited. And also just tips on staying younger longer. Doesn't matter what your age is. You just want to stay young and feeling good and looking good at the same time.
So, ladies, I am thrilled to be here with you today. I'm Dr. Vonda Wright. I am a board-certified orthopedic surgeon. And if you know anything about my field, there are less than 3% of us in the world. So if you want to know how to get along with men, I can tell you that in another session. But I love that this is a standing room only crowd, because I got to tell you, ladies in the back, you are the healthiest ones in the room right now. So in addition to the surgery and the books, I'm a bootstrapping entrepreneur, but I'm also a late mommy. So having had my first child at 41. So I hope that I have a lot to say to you guys today. I want you to get out your pens and start writing down the statistics we all tell you. The first of one is that you control 70% of your aging process. So, ladies, quit blaming your mothers. 30% is due to what they've given you. 70% is due to the choices we are going to talk about today. And you control 80% of the healthcare decisions for everybody you influence. So you are powerful in your own bodies, in the communities around you. And I want you to connect with me. If I say something that you want to hear more about, I want you to write down my email address, which is Vonda, V-O-N-D-A, at VondaWright.com. I will answer you. I will send you back what you ask for. And I might even give you my book. So let's go.
Well, I'm the most senior of this group. I have two grandchildren. I agree. I applaud any of you who are grandmothers. I'm a psychologist. And I will be adding the psychological perspective to all of this so we can make what we hear useful to us. I've been studying the psychology of beauty for over 30 years. That tells you how senior I am. I've been very interested in the role that our culture plays in the development of our self-image. It's no surprise, it's no secret, with a youth and beauty-obsessed culture that we have women who, in epidemic proportions, are struggling with their body image. I will be working with you, as I did in my book and with the thousands of women I have talked to, about how to change their approach to their aging body. I have young people in my practice, I'm telling you, as young as age 10, telling me that they feel fat. We know that 5 out of every 10 young girls by the time they're teens are starting serious diets. We were told that statistics will hold you, so I'm telling you 70%, close to 80% of women by the time they're 21 say they do not like what they see in the mirror. We as a group and as individuals have to change this. Unless we all change the way we view ourselves and each other, this is a culture that is going to give us a lot of problems in the future. So I will pass on what I have written in my book, which is Face It, and like Vonda, we will be available to answer questions. I will also give you my email. This is an interchange that we all need to have. So I appreciate your coming.
We're just adjusting for some technical issues so that we can get mics for our panelists. So the first topic, let's get right in there with everything that you guys said was at the top of the list. Let's talk about weight gain and how we fight that over the years. And I think that the person who could best speak to that would be Chrissy. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and give our attendees some excellent tips they can take away with them?
I do. So thanks. Here I come. Hi, ladies. So being a nutritionist, I must be asked this question at least 10 times a day. What should I weigh? I don't care. That's my answer. That's my answer usually. So I know when we walk into our doctor's offices and you're sitting there sometimes for 20 minutes waiting for them to come in, you know that chart on the wall that you stare at? It's your BMI chart. And all of a sudden, if you're 5'4", you should be 120 pounds. You know that chart? And you sit there for the next 20 minutes and just feel awful. You feel sorry for yourself. So I'm just going to give you one tip here, that the BMI chart, forget about it. Don't worry about it. Yay! My job's done here today. Yeah. So that BMI chart, we really don't pay attention to that much anymore. There is a tool that I do want you to know, okay? Write this one down. It's called your body composition. It's what you're made up of. So as we get older, what is the most important component for us to have inside of us? Lean mass. lean mass, stay stronger, for thousands of reasons, which I know you know. So the most important piece as we go forward, it doesn't matter what the scale says, okay? Statistically, the average woman, okay, you ready for this one? We can put on 8 to 10 pounds and lose 8 to 10 pounds in one day. Try it. On a day you don't have anything to do, right? Okay? So if you jump on the scale on Monday morning in the holiday season and you say, oh my gosh, like what did I do this weekend? How did I put on these 3 pounds? Don't worry about it. By Wednesday, you're feeling pretty good again, right? You're feeling pretty good about yourself because you're back in your routine, you're at the gym, you're eating well, you're drinking enough water, all these tips that we know. So I don't really care what that number on the scale says every day. You ready for this tip? This is how often you should weigh yourself. Well, you tell me, how often should we weigh ourselves? Once a week, once a day? The answer, once a month. Maybe twice, but once a month, okay? You need to know your progress and where you stand because it is important to know that weight. But most importantly, going back to body comp, where do we carry that weight? You know the apple and the pear? That apple shape is a little more dangerous for us for many, many health reasons, okay? So your shape doesn't matter, but where you carry the weight, if you do carry it in this apple region, this belly region, your health is a little more at risk, and that's what I care about. I want to know that you're healthy from the inside, not just on the outside, okay? So that's just a little quick background about weight. Here's another tip to take home with you, pen and paper. That's it, journal. Right? I know we all have iPhones out there. Three of us had ours up here today. So this iPhone is a great tool because these apps, right? There's an app for the conference today, but there's some really great apps. I'm going to give you a couple names. MyFitnessPal and Lose It. Two really great free apps where you can track, okay? To gain or lose weight, if you can add and subtract, you should be able to do that, right? We all passed at least, you know, third grade math, right? So if you can add or subtract your calories across the day, I'm not a big promoter of calorie counting, but if your goals are weight loss or to maintain, you do have to count, okay? Simple weight loss means you have to eat less, you have to move more. That's the simple formula. The hard part about going forward and maintaining and being successful in the long run, I'm gonna leave that to Vivian. Okay? That's a whole nother story. I can help you with numbers. But that is important to know where we stand each day. So just on an average day, count. What's my intake? What's my output? Okay? Journaling, statistics tell us, those of us who keep track, pen and paper, iPhone app, it doesn't matter. Keep track, write it down. I'm a visual person. I know probably most of us are in here. You have to write it down. You have to be accountable. Okay? You okay with journaling? Best tip number two that I want to give you is portion size, okay? Simplest tip to eating less is just eat the correct portions. Restaurants out there, we all live in the city, or a lot of you live in the city here, right, obviously? So restaurants are typically giving us 3 to 5 times the serving size we need, okay? I'm going to give you a really quick lesson about portion size, whether you cook at home or eat in restaurants, okay? Raise your right hand. Repeat after me. Just kidding. Well, still, keep your right hand up there. Okay, you see this palm? This palm is your portion. What's a palm size of protein, right? Yeah, who has the biggest hand in here, right? I want to have lunch with you today, yeah. So this is your protein size, okay, width and thickness, about 3 to 4 ounces for most women, okay? Make a little fist for me, right? This is your piece of fruit, okay? A couple servings a day, about this. So you know those bananas in the market, right? Those strawberries in the market, too big. Two fists together, okay? Go ahead and do this one. This is your veggie serving, right? Go crazy with your greens. You're going to get tired before you get full, okay? So there's your veggie. I want to show you this one. Thumbs up. Okay? You know what this is? Cheese. I know I just ruined your day. I'm so sorry. This is about 100 calories of cheese right here. And also a teaspoon of oil is also a thumb. Okay? So you watch these great cooking shows out there and they're pouring in like 600 calories before there's any food even in the pan. So really quick tip. The best useful tool for weight loss is right here. You have two of them. Okay, start to use these all the time. The last tip about maintaining, gaining, or losing weight I want to talk to you about is your beverages. right? What are you drinking across the day? It's the holiday season, you know, these cocktail parties that are coming up. Traditional restaurant pour, glass of wine, you have to give yourself 200 calories minimum. Okay? That's about 2 miles you have to run on the treadmill. So make sure you add that into your day. So alcohol is a big one. Soda is a big one. All these yummy Starbucks language I don't understand, coffees, okay? Really fun stuff. So really be careful about your beverage intake. If you're going to take in calories, I want to eat them. I want to make it worth it. Okay, we get a lot of pleasure, as Vivian's going to tell us, about the chewing and the gastric juices which are produced. So you need to have a healthy, healthy chewing component rather than just take in your liquid calories, because you're not going to get a lot of pleasure from that. Okay, you got the hand down? We've got the portion size, we've got the journaling, we've got your beverages. Three easy ways to go forward in maintaining your weight. And if you want to lose a little bit, you just scale back on these excess calories. Write them down and you'll see where they are in your own lives.
So we now have a microphone for the panel. Does that work? Can you test it out for me, Vaughn?
Can you hear me? Ooh, excellent. That's good, isn't it?
Fantastic.
All right.
So next, let's talk about aches and pains, and particularly chronic pain also, and how to avoid that. Vaughn is the perfect person to talk about it, and I'm glad that she's addressing it, because obviously it keeps you, or it holds you back from exercising and doing all the things that you need to do to maintain or to lose weight. And also chronic pain can lead to depression, which also has other health implications. So that's something that we want to avoid, and Vonda is going to tell us how to do that.
Well, the best way, this is a one-sentence answer. No, but then I'm going to tell you how to do it. The best way to remain as lubricated and pain-free as possible as we age is to simply move. You know what happens when you throw an old gear in the corner, some metal thing in a corner, and it doesn't move? It's going to rust out. So as an orthopedic surgeon, my goal is to make you not rust out, but not wear you out at the same time. We don't want to fall apart. So the best way to do that is to keep moving, frankly. The more sedentary we are, the least healthy we are. That's why all those people who used to be standing at the back of the room were doing a good job. How many of you sit for your job? Yes. There is no way to overcome 8 hours of sitting with a half an hour of exercise. So my first tip, I'm getting off track. I had 4 steps for you, but I'm going to go back. The first tip for you about how to maintain a pain-free life, a mobile life, is you've got to go back to being a fidgeter. Just like your kids are. I've got a 5-year-old. This girl does not stop. Sometimes I'm like, you have just got to stop. That's what we have to do. Get up and go to the copier 62 times. Stand up and answer your phone. I am not kidding you. I gave all the assistants in our offices those bouncy balls, half an hour a day, they're sitting there answering the phone. Yes, Dr. Wright, we'll see you now. Because the more we move, the healthier we are. We are designed to move. If we were not designed to move, we would not be born with the great-looking butts that we have and the strong legs that we have. We would be like a mushroom. We'd be flat on the bottom. So we've got to move. But why are you going to move? Just because some doctor on a stage told you, or just because some magazine told you, or your doctor in the office said, oh, you got to move, it's going to help you. You have to find out what's going to motivate you. Why are you going to move? Part of that is knowing yourself. We've already talked about some numbers to know, but I want to know, what's the last time you looked in the mirror and really noticed your body, other than, oh my God, I can't wear that dress anymore? I want you to notice what's fabulous about it. You know, you may not have the roundest butt, but maybe you've got great calves, or maybe you've got great arms. I want you to know what's great about you before you inventory the things in your ever-changing body that you want to change. Mobility is going to be the key to do that. But let's get to know ourselves, not only with our weight and our height. And I love the waist-hip ratio. I actually brought a tape measure because I was going to make somebody do it, but I won't. If you go home and you measure the biggest part, I'll do it on myself, I'll be the guinea pig, the biggest part of your waist, right under your belly button, and then the biggest part of your hips, and take the ratio, you want to be around 0.8. That's the waist-hip ratio. The closer you get to 1, the more dangerous it is for health. And this is what Chrissy was talking about in terms of your body shape. If you're an apple, you are 5 times more likely to die of a stroke than if you're a pear girl. You've got to know yourself and why you're going to move, because me telling you is not going to be enough. Number 2, I want you to move. The number 1 excuse that my patients give me for not moving is the same excuse that I have, and it's that I'm too busy. How am I going to fit in? Yesterday I worked from 4 a.m. to 9 p.m. and then I got on a plane this morning. How are you going to fit it in? Well, that's a good question for me too. So I've designed an answer. Did you know that you will decrease your chance of dying early by 20% by getting out of your chair and being intense 20 minutes a day? You can find 20 minutes to burn. So I've designed 8 20-minute circuits that if you email me, Vonda, at VondaWright.com, I'm happy to send to you. But it's a way to fit it in. If you only have 20 minutes, then burn for 20 minutes. If you've got 40, then stack two of these together. If you've got the luxury of an hour, then stack 3. But you have got to, A, find out why you should move based on what's valuable to you, and B, you've got to move. Number 3 on how to get rid of aches and pains is live an anti-inflammatory diet. Now, it is not a diet. I'm not a weight loss expert, but I can tell you that some of the things Chrissy were talking about are actually chemically vital for your joints and your muscles. An anti-inflammatory diet are things like primary color foods only, no processed foods, no processed sugar. Do not add white sugar to your coffee if you're going to. All of that increases at a cellular level the inflammation in your body, which leads to chronic disease. Be an omega-3 lover, whether you eat salmon or whether you take a supplement. Be a green tea drinker. Be a resveratrol taker, or because you can't get enough resveratrol, which is the French paradox. Why do all French women eat a lot of sauces, but they're so skinny? You can't drink enough wine to get it. So be a resveratrol taker. 7,000 glasses of red wine is going to kill you. And then my favorite is, and I am not an austerity person, but dark chocolate, ladies, is an anti-inflammatory diet. This much a day, 7 grams. Hey, it's better than nothing. So, I mean, I have so many more to go. So email me and I'll send you the complete thing now, because I don't want Linnea to pull out the rake on me. But number 1, know why you're going to move. What's your motivation? And then just do it. 20 minutes a day and get on an anti-inflammatory diet. Oh, yes. And Dr. Diller needs my mic.
All right, and now we're going to move on to Vivian, who will give us some emotional well-being advice.
Can you all hear me? Okay, so I have the tough job of helping you actually use these tips. How many of you go to these conferences, go to a spa, feel really motivated, and have a list of things that you're going to do, and you get stuck? You don't have to raise your hand. And I wish, as a psychologist, I could give you the 1, 2, 3 tips. You know, it kind of doesn't work that way. I know there was some talk, the 5-second something. I wish. But I do have 5 things I will help you focus on based on the research that I've collected from a number of other researchers as well as my own. Let me first start with, like psychologists, I have to go back a little bit and tell you, why is this so hard for us right now? Keep in mind, we are not just a youth, and this is the question I think you posed to me, why in a youth-oriented culture is this so difficult? It is not just that we are a youth and beauty-oriented culture. We are the generation that is being surrounded by digital imagery, airbrushed photos, a media that shows us constantly the unreality of what it means to age. Keep that in mind, that we are also at the same time an aging population. 10,000 people every single day starting last year will be turning 65.
every single day for the next 19 years. There are 78 million baby boomers in this country alone. We have the youth-oriented culture, and we have an aging population. This is a quandary, right? Same time, most of you, if I look at your ages, you were brought up like I was with the post-feminist belief that we would put looks to the back seat of all of the other things that we were going to achieve, right? Then why, when we hit 35, 40, we are preoccupied with our aging appearance? We feel very confused. We feel conflicted. Can you be true to yourself on one hand, but also look after your looks? As a psychologist, now I happen to have been a professional ballet dancer and then a model before I became a psychologist. And I was somewhat unpopular in the psychology world because I said I was going to study the role that beauty played. And they said, beauty? That's an oxymoron, the psychology of beauty. It's supposed to be your inside that counts, right? I said, please. We live in the real world. Beauty has a role in women's life. It's we have to redefine what it means to be beautiful. So that was my project. I interviewed many, many women, asking them the question, because I knew the statistic that if 8 out of every 10 women didn't like what they saw in the mirror, there was two of those every 10 women that did like what they see in the mirror. I wanted to find out what it was about those women. And it was across ages from about 25 to 75. I wish I had done it to 85. And these are the five things that seem to be in a commonality. I'll state them. I go into depth in the book. I don't want to give short shrift because these are important things to think about. These women felt they had a flexible idea of what it meant to be beautiful. They didn't have a rigid idea that I looked pretty then and I want to look like I once did. If they never felt they had an image of what was pretty or attractive and they wanted to be that. The women who felt attractive actually had a much more flexible notion of what it meant to be attractive. Two, they didn't focus on their faults. It's very hard to do that in our culture, right? The advertising world, and I consult now for advertising companies, which I feel so grateful that I'm getting an impact on that larger world. If you notice, they know it used to be that almost all the ads were called anti-aging products. And I have been working with a group of people to influence the fact that anti-aging is an insult. You can't anti-age. You can't stop the aging process. So they're now using Revitalize. I mean, it's not gotten that much better, but it's better than anti-aging. So these women who felt good about themselves, they were not focused on their faults. They looked at their assets. We all have something that we can feel attractive about. Third thing is they had a running internal dialogue. Everybody has this dialogue. You look in the mirror, you say, oh my God, I look this way, or you know, you have a reflection when you're walking to work, or you have a friend who you think is thinking something about you. These women had an internal dialogue that was kind. The way they would talk to their friend, they talked to themselves. You would never say to a friend what you say to yourself in the mirror. Oh my God, you look disgusting. Who would say that to a friend? Well, you can train yourself to have that more gentle, kind dialogue. It takes practice, and I give that exercise in the book. The third thing is this competition we have. Who are we competing with? Are we competing with younger women? When they say, 50 is the new 15, I say, what? 50 is the new 50. 50, you are, if you look great for 50, that's wonderful. If you're great at 60. So this competitiveness or comparison is very unhelpful. And then lastly, the women who felt good about themselves had a good balance between taking care of themselves, letting looks matter, but not letting them matter so much that they couldn't gradually let their looks change. If it matters too much, I've been around so many models and dancers. If these women, you would put them on the cover of a magazine, but if they don't look just that way, they don't feel attractive. I hope I have some chance to talk about the difference between feeling attractive and beauty, because it's very different.
All right, so the next thing, oh, please.
So the next thing I wanted to do is go decade by decade and have each of our panelists give a little advice for women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So we'll do that. If we hit a decade that you have already passed, still listen up and give yourself a pat on the shoulder if you did what they said that you should do, or pass the information along to somebody else who you know who is in that decade. If we are talking about decades you haven't gotten to yet, take notes, keep that in mind as the process continues. So let's start at the 20s. If every panelist could just give one solid tip, what you should be thinking about in your 20s.
Okay, so in our 20s, the most important thing nutritionally to do is build a healthy foundation. Okay, I think that's the best tip I can give you, because in our 20s, what's happening? We are trying to build our careers. We are eating alone most times. We are eating very quickly in a lot of restaurants. And our bones are pretty much getting close to the peak development. So the most important things we can do is really plan ahead, really come up with healthy meals that you can grab and go with or come home to very quickly. And the best nutrient to add into your diet in your 20s is actually, well, I'll say it's two. It's going to be calcium as well as vitamin D, and that's really important for bone health.
But not vitamin D versus via olive oil on the beach. Okay, just wanted to clarify that. So in your 20s, you know, I echo what Chrissy says. We are in a building phase. You stop building bone at 30. You have the best muscle mass building. So even if you're 20 and you have never stepped away from the couch, this is still a vital decade for you. So do the things we're all talking about. It's simple. It's as simple as grabbing the beach ball that I gave to my assistants and just sitting on it all day. It doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be in a gym. I want you to move. I don't want you to take the escalators. I want you to walk across the convention center. But 20s is the time when you're going to build the foundation for then what we're going to use the rest of our lives.
I recently wrote an article about this in Huffington Post, if anybody wants to take a look at it. What I described in your 20s is actually the most stable period of time in the development, the psychological development of self-image. Mm-hmm. Your self-image is forming and changing during adolescence. It has a period of stability for most 20-year-olds. But I have probably many of you have children in their 20s. I don't see too many 20-year-olds here, but I have a 5-year-old daughter. What I want you to convey to them is that there is an enormous pressure on 20-year-olds right now, more so than when we were in our 20s, because unlike when we were in our 20s where we could wear sweatpants and have downtime, there is now enormous pressure 24/7. In the gym, they wear Lululemon. In the underwear, they have to wear Victoria's Secret. They go to work. You no longer wear a man-tailored suit. You have to wear high heels. At least in Manhattan, you do. So what I tell women in their 20s is that this is a time to find a look that you enjoy, that feels close to your identity, and develop it in a comfortable way. In addition to all these biological routines, and I think they're important, but psychologically, it's finding a look that suits you, not that is driven by the media.
I like that.
So let's move on to the 30s.
Okay, the 30s. I guess this is my specialty here. I'm still trying to figure it out, but I'm hearing, right, that the 30 decade is the busy time for moms, right? By this point, we're kind of thinking about being a mom. We are a mom. We're taking care of families. We're trying to balance job, wife, friends, kids, teacher, taxi cab driver, disciplinarian. Did I get them all in there? So that's the busiest time in our lives. So again, this is the best time for your diet. You know, hopefully at this point, we are cooking for our family. So maybe we are doing a little more at-home dinners versus a lot of restaurant eating like we were in our 20s. But when we cook these dinners, there's a great component I want you to add into them. They're your dark leafy greens. And in these dark leafy greens, there's the vitamin called folic acid. So if you are planning a family, this is the most important nutrient for you to have to prevent some birth defects out there. Within that leafy green range, I also want to throw out the word organic, because there are a lot of pesticides, obviously, on our foods these days. And there's that list called the Dirty Dozen. Are you familiar with that one? great website, ewg.org, or another app, okay? I am the world of technology now, and that's called the Dirty Dozen. And that is the top 12 most contaminated fruits and vegetables through pesticide. So very important to have at your fingertips. So if you are feeding yourself or your families, very important to choose those top 12 organically. Dark leafy greens, most of them do fall on that list, which is why I mentioned that. So not just folic acid is important during this decade, it would also be the B vitamins in general, because in times of stress and busyness, the B vitamins are the first thing depleted. And that's also going to include your vegetables and your fruits, but also whole grains. So I know this carb and starch world is a little scary for some of us still, but it's very important to add that into your diet. Not only do these whole grains give us the B vitamins, they're also full of fiber, which is going to keep us full and satisfied, again, sort of cleaning the pipes of the body, which is probably one of your best tips for anti-inflammatory diet.
And I just wanted to jump in for 1 second. Please, please do look at that Dirty Dozen list. I hear a lot of feedback from women who say, eating organic is so expensive. I can't buy everything organic. And there's also a lot of confusing news in the press. I think there was a study that came out about 3 or 4 months ago that said, oh, organic food isn't any, it doesn't have, contain any more vitamins than regularly produced greens and vegetables. But you really do want to be mindful, I personally believe, you really do want to be mindful of the amount of pesticides that you're ingesting. So that list of 12 is what you can focus on, and some other things can fall by the wayside when money gets to be an issue.
Great. So in the 30s, if you're already 30 or even if you're beyond that, this is when we lose it. In our 20s, we're in college and we really don't have much responsibility. But when we're 30s, we're at least in our first career. We're forming long-term relationships. And all the things that Chrissy talked about that start to derail us. And if we had good habits, they go down the drain. And we find ourselves arriving in our 40s with no good habits or habits that we don't like. Or maybe, this ever-changing body, which I frankly think is a very natural thing to happen to us, we don't even recognize it. So in our 30s, I want you to do a reset. And I just hatched this scheme, and if I had hatched it in my 30s, I would have done it then. But if you currently need to develop lifelong habits in terms of eating and moving and the way you think about yourself, I want you to take a month for me. You're not going to do anything unless you schedule it. I want you to choose a month. I'm 16 years late with this, but I'm going to choose February, my birthday month, and I'm taking a month for me. I'm going to focus every day on something that I want to be different in my life, not because it's bad, but because I need to reset. In your 30s, if you haven't done it, if you haven't established the habits that will become your lifelong program, take a month for me. And schedule it in your calendar. It sounds weird. We've got so many responsibilities, but you're important. You're more important than your job. Or why are you keeping healthy for your spouse, your kids, for you? So reset in a month for me. And if you want to do my February with me, let me know. You can do it with me.
Okay, like Vonda says, physically it is the time of change. Emotionally, most women in their 30s are either finishing having children or having their children. They're dealing with their changing body image because of pregnancy. They struggle to get their body image back. With that coincides what I call in my book the uh-oh moment. That uh-oh moment, we all know it. It's that moment where you... The evidence of this is unfortunately seen in the number of people who start Botox and fillers in their 30s. So they're seeing the fine lines, the gray hair. And what I want to convey is, unlike my colleagues in psychology who say, well, you get used to the beauty inside, I tell women that when you feel that uh-oh moment, there's a good reason why it strikes you so hard. Because at that moment where you see those fine lines, that gray hair, whatever bothers you, it is striking at the core of your feminine identity. It is at that point where something hits you and says, something will never be the same. Because you're beginning to feel and anticipate perimenopause and menopause. And that is a fundamental change in our identity. I don't care how many jobs you hold or how much money you make for your family. It is still going to strike at the core. So if it's tough, think about how to deal with that tough emotional feeling rather than immediately running to get the Botox or the fillers to stop an inevitable process. There's a way to do this where you don't have to stop things, but that you go with them. Well, maybe we'll get to that in the 40s.
All right, so let's do that. Let's move on to the 40s and talk about menopause and how your body changes in that decade and what everyone can do about that.
Okay, menopause. This is a great question that I actually get asked very often because these perimenopausal women or menopausal or postmenopausal women come in and they do this. They grab the belly, right? How come I have this? I had a flat belly for 30, 40 years of my life. Why do I have this now? Hormones do shift. Hormones absolutely shift. And who's that typical apple person we talked about earlier today? It's the men. Right? The men typically have that apple shape. Women were more of the pear shape traditionally. But what happens around the time of menopause is we start to mimic the men. Estrogen is dropping off, testosterone picks up a little bit. So that is one reason for the change in the body. So a great nutritional tip to truly follow for maybe a little bit of the weight change is everything we've been talking about. It's portions, it's great exercise, it's drinking enough water. But then there's this question of soy. Right? Should we not? I don't know. My friend told me this. I read this study. And the answer for you is I don't have the answer. I don't have the answer. You know, I'm very lucky that I've sat with great breast cancer oncologists and I say, you tell me, what do you tell patients? And they say, we don't know still. So the best answer that I give my patients now is that if you personally or you have a very strong family history, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, even prostate cancer in your family, anything to do with the hormones, you have to be careful. You have to be careful. So we want to keep those servings limited, say three servings a week of soy. And here's the biggie, write this one down, organic, organic, organic. I cannot stress that enough with the world of soy because the soy products are actually, well, I should say the soybeans are the number one genetically modified food out there. Do you know that definition, genetically modified? You take the DNA of one organism and implant it to the DNA of another, and there's some sort of science laboratory change that we don't really understand yet, okay? So how is that affecting the internal body? We don't know. But there is a lot of evidence that soy can help regulate your mood, PMS, and also the world of menopause. So if you like soy, you enjoy soy, be careful with soy, make sure you choose it organically, and you can dabble with that a little bit. The big piece about the 40s is I really want to stress for you here too is also your brain health. Alzheimer's, one of the top killers of people in this world right now, and the symptoms of Alzheimer's now are not showing up about 20 years after the disease already starts. So traditionally it's about the 60s or so that we're starting to see some diagnosis. So think about your 40s, right? If it's in your family, I do want to encourage you to be really smart with your brain health, all the tips and tricks of crosswords and learn a language and play a musical instrument. But nutritionally, it really goes back to the idea of omega-3s and again, an anti-inflammatory diet.
So I'm going to talk about 40s and 50s together. And who wants to build a better brain? There is a huge body of literature to key off of what Chrissy just finished with, that now says that what we were taught in grade school, that we're born with one set of neurons that we then kill in college by drinking, and that's all we get. The fact is, we can build a better brain throughout our lifespan, and one of the key factors for doing that is not only nutrition, but high-intensity movement. Everybody hates the word exercise right now, and I don't blame you, but I want you to move hard and fast for 20 minutes, and I'm happy to send you those things. Because it's going to build your hippocampus. The hippocampus is responsible for executive function, all those smart decisions you make, all that coordination of care, all that stuff you do at work and balancing your checkbook. That's your hippocampus, and intense exercise, movement, 20 minutes a day is going to give that to you. But I think the 40s, and I'm right smack dab in the middle, and I can tell you this is the best decade of my life for many reasons. This is the vital decade. We need to get our proverbial stuff together before we hit the storm of 50, because I can't change that my ovaries are going to shut down. So I've got to get my ducks in a row in my 40s. Here's my message to you. There is never an age or a skill level when your body will not respond to what you're asking it to do by becoming more healthy, building a better brain, and feeling better. You just have to put in the work. You have 10 years in your 40s to do it.
It's not too late in your 50s, but this is a vital decade for us. And I want you to know that of the 13, I mean, look at Dr. Viller.
I'm worried.
No, don't be. You've obviously gotten it right. But the fact is, when you're like, what if you're saying to yourself, I was never an athlete, I never moved? Well, 52% of the 13 million marathoners in this country are women. Their median age is 40, and many of them are first-timers. There's never, even if you're walking this marathon, there's never a time when you can't start. 40 is vital. I think 50 is going to be grand. I'm going to take a whole month to celebrate it when I turn it. But I think you have to get your ducks in order.
I'm almost 60. I'm 59. As I said before, that the 20s is stable, 30s is often child-rearing, 40s and 50s, probably outside of adolescence, is the most challenging time emotionally when it comes to your ever-changing body. And women, you need to talk to one another about menopause. It's as if menopause is a disease. You know, we used to think of getting your period as something that was the curse, remember? Yeah. Not that long ago. We've changed from that. Now we send our boyfriends out to get tampons. Well, the attitude towards menopause needs to change, and only we can change it. It is a challenging time. Emotionally, we are moody. If you're prone to depression during adolescence, you're going to be prone to it during menopause. A lot of what these women are saying are very important preambles to be able to manage your menopause well. But it is a complicated time. Those uh-oh moments, they become uh-oh years. My advice to you, not only by sharing what you experience, is you have to accept the fact that there's a sense of loss. If you don't, if you fight loss, if you don't accept that there are adjustments, that there's a letting go of who you were when you were 20, 30, instead of, I have to be that same person, you will fight and you'll be anxious. That makes us feel and look old. What has allowed me, having been a dancer, I can't, when I look at those pictures of my leg over my head, I said, wow, if I tried to do that, it would hurt. But I stay very active. I have let go of some of the things that defined me in my younger years, but I've made room for new ways to define myself. And some of it is up here talking to you, feeling passionate about you all joining together to help one another, because it's going to come from us, not from the advertising world, even if I'm trying to change it there.
All right, so we have a little bit less than 10 minutes left. What I want to do is fast track this. If you have a question, please do come over to this microphone, queue up over here so that we can get to some questions very quickly. And I'm going to ask the panelists, I'm going to keep you to a little less than 60 seconds to each give one really great tip for the 50s and the 60s. Go, Chrissy.
That's a lot of pressure. Okay, 50s, 60s, the best answer is to stay fit and young. So I'm going to give you some spices, cinnamon, ginger, turmeric. That's it. It's my teaser.
The number one complaint of aging is feeling weak. To avoid staying weak, we are going to build our lean muscle mass throughout a lifespan. But even if we get to 60 without it, we are still going to build it, because one in three people fall down over the age of 60. A third of you will break your hip. 50% of you, if you break your hip, will never return to pre-fall function, and a third of you will die. You cannot fall down. This orthopod is telling you, do not fall down, and the way to do that is to stay strong.
Okay, while you're not falling, you have to remember that this is the time where your nest is being emptied and your elderly parents need your care. An empty nest may come back, by the way. We are learning about that. But my advice to you would be, take the time, even if you were that sandwich generation, take the time to do what these women are suggesting, because if you don't take that time, you will not be able to care for those adult children who come back or those elderly parents who need you.
All right. I just want to emphasize what Vonda was saying just a little bit more, because I interviewed Dr. Oz, and I know that you've been on his show before, and He says that frailty is a number one killer. So you want to be strong. Don't be scared of lifting weights. Don't be afraid of getting to the gym and what everybody looks like compared to what you look like. Get out there and get your body healthy. Question.
Okay. Sorry, I jumped up too quick. I just want to say this is an excellent panel. You deal with experts in mind, body, and nutrition, which is all things that are so important to all of us. But I'm actually a nurse, and so as sleep-deprived and, you know, eating things on the go, all these tips are just wonderful. But my question is that I recently had an appointment at my PCP's office, and I'm going to be 38 in January, and I'm not okay with where I am, weight-wise, you know, exercise. And it's hard as a nurse when you know all the tools that you need to utilize to make the changes. But she made a comment to me, and it happens to be a woman, in the sense that, well, you're almost 40, so you do have to accept that your body is going to be going through these changes. But how would you suggest for someone who is in such a busy profession to make changes and, like, to initiate? I guess, like you said, the 20 minutes and some of these things, the portion size. But how do you start when you're, like, sort of all over the place with where you want to focus? So,
I think you have to be simple. And, mm-hmm. and 20 minutes is something you can find. Stairways in your hospital, you can do that. But even diet-wise, and Chrissy should chime in, but cut out the caramel macchiato thing that has 325 calories. Do not use salad dressing on your green, healthy, gorgeous salad because it's 100 calories per tablespoon. That's going to clog up your arteries. Mm. And stop drinking pop. Three things, so simple, plus 20 minutes a day. That'll be minus 1,000 calories a day. Done.
Last thing I'm going to add to that is to bring your lunch. Don't eat from the cafeteria.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's a really great tip. Thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Next question.
Hi. I'm an acupressurist and an energy medicine practitioner, so I work with a lot of women going through menopause. I'm not there yet. But and I help them relax and mind, body, and everything else. But when you're talking about loss, whether it's physically or mentally, this is so confusing because I live in a world of just guys. I have teenage sons, husband. Everybody's a guy except me. And I don't understand the concept of loss. I understand how things change. But if you want, I just don't understand, like, loss. And a lot of women that I work on, you won't have any sexuality once you hit this age. You won't look like that at this age. It's terrible.
Okay. The best way to use this concept of loss is that in order to move on, we always have to say goodbye to something. You can't move through a new door unless you close another. So we're not talking about loss like the mourning, the sadness. There may come that. But instead, think about, in order to embrace your changes that come, especially as you're anticipating menopause, is if I am able to let go, I do make room for something else. That's the way I would encourage you to think of loss. You know, when Vonda was talking, I was saying, oh, my God, you know, I'm not that. I'm not. But I'm thinking about all the other things that I have become. And you can't do that. It's like letting go of a boyfriend in order to have a new one. You can't move on to the new one unless you mourn the previous one.
But can you accept the losses of certain things, but there are some things that are constant? Like, for example, they say as soon as your ovaries stop working, then you're not going to be a sexual person anymore.
Well, it's not true.
And that's scary.
I mean, that's a good example. Sexuality changes with age. Sexuality doesn't stop. Sensuality can be maintained until you're dead.
Thank you.
I want to get one last question in here. This is the last question that we have time for, so just get it in very quickly, please.
Okay. I just wanted to know if you could speak to the sandwiching of women. I have 10 year older than me sisters, and I have a young daughter who's 23. I'm in my mid-50s. I had a sister who said to me, once you turn 50, you'll never be able to lose weight again. I said, really? And I lost 10 pounds. I had a daughter who dances, and she said, Mom, when you're 50, you'll never dance again. I took up competitive ballroom dancing at 53. I'm wondering if you can speak to that, because I think sometimes women are their own worst enemies. And I'm in the middle, and I feel like I'm fighting a battle, not with my husband, who actually loves all of that, but with my sister and my daughter.
Just quickly, and I'll pass it over. That's my message.
it's up to us to defy what obviously the media, the culture has told us, that sandwich generation, you know, we'll never have time for ourselves. You make time for yourself. You'll never be sexual. You can't look beautiful unless you have perfectly clear skin. I mean, who's going to combat that unless we do?
I just wanted to thank everyone for coming today. I know we didn't get to everyone's questions, but come up, talk to our panelists, go to their book signings and chat with them there. And let's give them a round of applause for coming.